good morning, everyone. My name is David Buller, and I'll be moderator for this block of sessions here on Communicating Science, the Future of Science Education and the Church. First presenter is Dennis Barrill.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Be speaking on Applying Science Speaks to Faith, Communicating Scientific and Technological Advancement to the Church.
Okay, well, thank you for coming. It kind of feels like we're just jumping in, doesn't it? Before I begin, there's a man coming down the aisle here. His name is Jack Richardson. He's got a 60-year badge on. And when you hear me talk, you realize I'm way out of my league here talking to you all. And Jack has been a friend and advocate, and he's offered me tremendous support and challenge, encouragement. And if this presentation goes well, you can thank him. If it goes badly, me. Okay? But I just want to acknowledge Jack. Let me see if I can figure out how to make this work. I think if I get this one. Yes. Okay, as I am not a scientist, I'm not an engineer, I'm not an academic, I'm not any of the things normally people stand up here and say, here's what I've done, and so I have nothing to say that I've done, except this. I worked 20 years in technology at the line level at AT&T back in the Bell System days, and I left there and I went into ministry, and I pastored in New England Church for 27 years. And so it's out of that that I stand here as I speak about our technology. I worked for an organization called Living on the Edge. And Living on the Edge, you may or may not have ever heard of it, but we're in contact with about 1 million people globally each week through broadcast ministry and through podcast ministries and whatnot. And we are basically a discipleship ministry. And in addition to that, we are also we've trained in the past 2 years 170,000 leaders. We're in 23 different countries. And so we're very active in this. And this talk is because we see a need in the church, and we're here to appeal to you all to help us. Okay? And so program, it said that the title of this was Applied Science Speaks to Faith, Communicating Scientific Technology to the Advancement of the Church. And that was written, I wrote the abstract for this back in December, and I was working off of what we were doing just a year ago. I was at the conference in San Diego on a learning expedition, and I was sharing an idea for a podcast. And that podcast, I call it the 2022 project, was that we were saying, these are the five technologies we think we'd like to talk about in a podcast, and we'd like to talk about them in terms of what the potentials are for these, and kind of mention some problems or some perils that could come in along the way. But we were just kind of going along with that, and we were getting ready to launch that podcast when the world changed. The world changed around, we'll just say the world changed, we'll come to that in a minute. And we looked at the technology issues and said, you know, we've got to make some changes to what we're thinking here. And instead of traditional computing, we came back with the term and said, we've got to look at quantum computing, because we were seeing headlines like this. Quantum computers could overtake classical ones within 2 years, IBM benchmark experiment shows. And after artificial intelligence, quantum computing could be the next big thing, according to Mr. Staley. Well, that kind of said, wait a minute, we don't even know what that means. Some of you may know, I have no idea what that means. But if they're saying that's a benchmark, that's something we should be talking about in terms of what's happening. And then we all, artificial intelligence was driving things. And instead of genetic engineering, we're seeing that the DNA, RNA, CRISPR editing was really driving a lot more in biology than just general engineering, at least we think so. And when we look at artificial intelligence, DNA, quantum computing, there's a statement that came out and said, it's all code now. And that was like really scary to me. As a pastor, what do you mean it's all code now? And so then we talk about robotics, and data mining seemed to be a really big problem. So we looked at those things and we said, okay, we really need to talk about those technologies, but we're going to talk about them. We also need to think about what's the social impact of technology that's taking place in the world and what that's looking like. And so we started thinking about things like gender dysphoria. And with gender dysphoria, I call it the lack of science, because so much has been taken down about gender dysphoria that doesn't make sense. For example, here in the United States, we're pushing gender dysphoria like, oh my gosh, this is the saving thing for all these kids and things like that. But in Finland and Sweden, not known for being the bastion of conservative sexual ethics, and England just have said, no more. No more. We're not doing any more surgeries. We're not doing any medications. We're not allowing it. There's a book by author Hannah Barnes called Time to Think, The Inside Story of the Collapse of the Tavistock's Gender Services for Children, which is England. And what happened? Why did it close? About 10 days ago, an article came out in the Free Press, which you may or may not have heard, not exactly a conservative news paper, said Mike, and by a guy by the name of Michael Bailey, who was a Northwestern University research professor, and he said, my research on gender dysphoria was censored, but I won't be. And it was all about how his, he said some things and it got censored. And so gender dysphoria is really present in our culture, but we're having a very hard time figuring out what is the science behind that. And we think that should be a discussion. We think social media is a valid discussion. You may have seen the Social Dilemma movie on Netflix, the documentary, and put out by the Center of Humane Technology. Excellent, but raises so many questions about social media. Creation care is very confusing to us in the church. It may not be to you, but it's very confusing to me. For example, the climate book, Facts and Solutions, comes out and says, here's all the things you need to know. And then a guy by the name of Stephen Koenig, this is just an example, writes a book called Unsettled, What Climate Science Tells Us, What It Doesn't, and Why It Matters. And he was a big guy in climate change, and so it leaves us wondering with a lot of questions and need to be discussed. We think that microeconomics, if AI is going to restructure the workforce over the next 5 years, churches are very, very vulnerable to a restructuring of the workforce. Most churches live on a week-to-week budget, virtually. They live on the offering. And if you take 10-15% of their professional group and displace them out of work and take them and change their job, you just change the offering structure of that church in a tremendous way. The church is unprepared for even thinking about what that means. And lastly, I think that, and I think the reality of that shows up in the current strike by the of the screenwriters in Hollywood saying, we don't want AI. Now, they've been writing about it in sci-fi for years, and now that it's in front of them, they're going, no, no, we get what it means. You can't do that to us. Well, golly, it's going to happen, it looks like. And then lastly, we think the theology, I love today's this morning's presentation, so this just shows my ignorance, but there's a paper called Spots of Artificial General Intelligence, Early Experience with GPT-4. It's put out by Microsoft Research with 14 authors signing on as of April 13th. There's debate about what that means in time frames. So all of this is pretty scary to us. And so we think there's some conversations that you all have in various disciplines, knowledge in, that the church needs. You're the gifted ones. You're the scientists. You're the academics. And so if I was renaming this talk today, I'd call it Bridging Faith and Science, Communicating the Impact of Scientific Advancements and the Resulting Cultural Adaptations to the Church. And now, what happened? What changed? Well, on November 30th, I think we should put this date right alongside the Wright brothers' first flight. And it is the day OpenAI released ChatGPT. Like it or not, it came on with a thunder. And it's kind of like, since then, it isn't like we're waiting a month to see what the next news is. It's like a daily piece of news. And I've never seen anything moving so quickly through the paradox. And so, and it's a significant thing. The CEO of Google said, I've always thought of AI as the most profound technology humanity is working on. More profound than fire or electricity or anything that we've done in the past. My gosh, I don't know how to process that sentence because it's here. And then you may not like Jordan Peterson, and I can understand that, but he has 7 million followers and on YouTube. And he said that it's a Gutenberg-level invention. Gutenberg changed the world, then are we on the edge of changing our world? And if we are, what does that look like for the church? Not for society. What does it look like for our churches, for our, the way we are to survive in this? And so there's been, we're facing profound transformations, and they will impact faith and the Christian life. They'll impact our churches, they'll impact our people, and the way we think about it. So our need is how to live within a changing societal perspective on God and the value of living a Christian lifestyle. Therefore, a fresh understanding of discipleship that functions within the complexity of the emerging culture is needed. Our discipleship models are not geared for where we're going. And we need help informing what your discipleship will look like in the future. So I want to use an illustration to show what I mean. I'm going to use an AI illustration, only because it's the one that's so dominant in everything else. But I want, there's three things that I think could happen for the church in terms of AI. I call them the peril, the promise, and the problem. I'm a pastor, I need to do that kind of thing. By the way, I can't believe I had to do this in 20 minutes. I'm a pastor. So the guys who did the social dilemma recently did a thing called the AI dilemma. It's accessible on YouTube, and I highly suggest you watch it, the AI dilemma on YouTube. They have the Center for Humane Technology. And they start their talk with this from a study of 736 individual researchers in technology. And they said 50% of AI researchers believe there's a 10% or greater chance that humans go extinct from our inability to control AI. You gotta just stop and think about that. They make the point, if you were gonna get on an airplane, and 50% of the engineers that built the airplane said there's a 10% chance this plane's gonna crash, would you get on? That's an incredible thing. I call it the Borg, if you're a Star Trek fan at all, I call this the Borg mark. Because they just got, this is the extreme. But the fact that the extreme exists in conversation can't be understood. But the truth is, we in the church, we can't do a thing about that. If it comes, it comes. It's like the atomic bomb. You see, if you saw Oppenheimer, the movie recently came out, it's, you can't do a thing about it, it's here. And AI is here. And then that is a real, it's just really serious. On the other hand, what's the promise? I found an article by Mark Anderson that I like to see, and I'd like to quote this. What AI offers is the opportunity to profoundly augment human intelligence to make all of these outcomes of intelligence and many others, from the creation of new medicines to the ways to solve climate change to technologies to reach the stars, much, much better. In the article, listen to the things he said and listen to the terminology he's using. In a new era, every child will have an AI tutor that is infinitely patient, infinitely compassionate, infinitely knowledgeable, infinitely helpful. The AI tutor will be each child's side, by each child's side, every step of their development, helping them maximize their potential with the machine version of infinite love. Every person will have an AI assistant, coach, mentor, trainer, advisor, therapist, that is infinitely patient, infinitely compassionate, infinitely knowledgeable, and infinitely helpful. The AI assistant will be present through all of life's opportunities and challenges, maximizing every person's outcomes. Every scientist will have an AI assistant, collaborator, partner with, that will greatly expand their scope of scientific research and achievement. Every artist, every engineer, every business person, every doctor, every caregiver will have the same in their ranks. Scientific breakthroughs and new technologies and medicines will dramatically expand as AI further helps us further decode the laws of nature and harvest them for our benefits. That, if the other one's the Borg, this is life on the Enterprise. I mean, it's incredible. So we've got these two extremes, the promise and the peril. What's the problem? Is the problem the peril or the promise of the church? over a year ago, I was watching a feed from MIT. Then went to YouTube and only stayed on their channel for about 2 weeks after it was done. And it was a conversation between Eric Schmidt, the former CEO of Google, and Dan Hatlocker, who you may not have ever heard of. But Dan Hatlocker is the dean of the new MIT Schwarzman College of Computing. The Schwarzman College of Computing at MIT was started with a funding of $1.1 billion. And it created 50 new faculty positions. It's an interdisciplinary college where they're bringing in all different disciplines to work about how to use AI interdisciplinary. So they're saying it's going to affect every area of life except for theology and philosophy. And they're bringing in policymakers, economists, all of these people, and say, let's work together and make AI serve in these areas. Very interesting prospect. But in the conversation, out of nowhere, Dan said, before the Enlightenment, the church was the purveyor of truth. After the Enlightenment, both science and the church became the purveyors of truth. In the future, I see AI becoming the locus for God. That scares me. That scares me. I thought about that for the last year. Going, is this like just no false gods before me, or is this something, what am I missing? So when I read the stuff that I just read to you about a personal coach, infinite love, and everything coming from an AI tutor, it scared me. Then I found this article by Paul Kingsworth, Rage Against the Machine. And he says, I'm writing these words on the internet. You were reading them here. And daily it was hard to work, shop, bank, pocket, library, speak to a human in a position of authority, or teach your own children without the machine's intervention. This is our new God. And then I realized, I didn't sleep the night I realized this. Honestly, I did not sleep this night. That a personal coach, and if Musk has his way, that talks to our brain, is telling us everything we need to be. It's a lot like the Holy Spirit. And that the greatest danger to the church may not be the peril, but maybe the promise. Because if the promise is realized, what do you need God for? What's our discipleship when God is displaced by a new God? Well, those are extremes, but somewhere in the middle, the truth probably lies. So, I thought about perils, promise, and the problem of all 10 of these, and I'm kind of lost. And then I asked myself, what boundaries, if any, should Christians set? How do we know where our boundaries are? We don't even understand what's happening in the local church. You want to just have some window of what's happening. You're the academics, you're the scientists. We don't know. We've come to the conclusion that it's impossible to live outside of the technological bubble, just like that quote gave us, is that the Benedict doctrine, when you're moving into monasteries with the church, is not practical. But then there's boundary questions. And so here's some examples of what I mean. We could write 20 of them just in an hour if we sat here. We could easily write 25 of them. Where should the boundaries be set? What's the Christian boundary for the use of these technologies? When should AI be embraced? What AI tools should be created for the church? I'm actually having a conversation with a scientist out in California, and we're saying, he doesn't like this word at all, and I get it, but he likes some. I'll give you his words. Should we be creating an AI spiritual director for the Christian life? Should we be thinking about an AI guide that's readily available to us to remind us of God's principles and words? If the kids are going to have tutors, should we have something like that? Should we be thinking in those terms? Or is that outside the bounds? I don't know. And I don't even profess to ever be capable of knowing. But I think we need to be talking about those things. I think we need to be talking about them. And you need to help us in the church talk about these things. We need that. So, bridging faith and science, my purpose of being here is a call for collaboration. We're appealing to you. I'm asking you. I'm begging you all to help us. This is a serious time. We need scientists, technologists, economics, and church thought leaders to come together, kind of like what we used to do at the councils of history. When the church faced problems, councils would come together and discuss and say, how do we resolve this? We need councils to discuss understanding and fresh perspectives on living faith in the emerging culture. We need to understand in ordinary language. A lot of your conversation, I don't understand. We need to ask you questions that help you break it down so we can understand. Engagement with the body of Christ in the new world. We need it. We need your help. So how we propose to do it? We see two things we want to do. The first thing is, we want to engage in discussions and podcasts with scientists, technologists, academics, church thought leaders, with the aim of stimulating dialogue among all of those characteristics for the church. I'm very concerned about society at large, but as a pastor, I'm very concerned about what does the church look like in this new world, and I don't get anyone talking about it. So we would like to start a podcast, and we'd like to invite all of you to participate with us. Think about this, pray about this. And then we're committed to having a gathering by the end of 2024, to encourage research, publication, to encourage ongoing communication that will enable the church to thrive, much like Joanne talked about. She was creating a model for the Christian to thrive in the emerging technological culture. We need help. We need one another. You're the gifted members of the body of Christ that have the intellect to help us see this. And that's not flattery, that's fact. So our conclusion is, what will be the future of faith in a technological age? We don't know. But we need to stop talking about this in real terms. So we'd like to invite you to join us in our work to build a bridge between faith and science. There's a QR code up there. There's a more extensive paper available through the QR code. There's a form that you can fill out and just let us know that you're interested in talking about this with us. We'll communicate with you. We're not trying to create a mailing list. We're not trying to create a community. We're just trying to create a conversation. And so there's a QR code if you want. There's a hard copy. Andrew's up there in the back. He's got some cards with the QR code. He'll give you a copy if you want on the way out. But thank you for listening. And that's my need. I'm from the church. I'm not from your world. And I'm asking for your help.
Jennifer.
Thank you for that presentation and clear call for help. I was wondering if you had ideas about how organizations that already exist that you may or may not know about, like there's an organization called Science for the Church, and there's an organization called BioLogos, and ASA, of course, how these organizations that already exist can partner with you and be
very, very good. Well, it's very interesting. We had some conversations with ASA, and we love your mission. And BioLogos, we love their mission. And most of it, but here's what it is, you're all talking to one another in those. And we want you to step out of the one another conversation. Someone said to me last night, we were talking about this, they brought up BioLogos, and they said, well, we want to get credibility with one another. And I was like, yeah, I don't care about your credibility. You've got credibility just because of who you are when you come to the church. And so we don't know how to build that. But we think what goes on in terms of spreading the gospel through academics, and we love that ASA is trying to figure out how to go into more secular universities and great churches and things like that. That's a real important mission. We don't feel like that's talking to the church. And we're trying, if there's organizations that are trying to do it, then we'd love to talk to them and see if we can figure out how to come partner with them. We're not trying to do something unique, we're just trying to figure out how to come together to do this. Great. Is that fair?
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, super good. Thank you. I think you raised some very interesting questions that are new ones and important ones for faith and science, which used to be more the debate is, you don't need God to explain something from the secularist, the scientist say, oh, yes, you do, or you can admire. This, I think, really, there are new elements, and I actually
all in favor of this dialogue, but my impression has often been is the churches aren't really a whole lot interested in talking to the scientists, with some exceptions. But I'm wondering if you can comment on that. You're interested, but maybe you're very much an exception.
Well, first of all, you're not the first person to call me brown shoes in a black tuxedo world. But, yeah, I think we are unique, okay, in coming to you all and asking for this. And I understand there's a lot of church resistance. I understand that this is a political and, you know, minefield of problems. That's why we keep referring to Christian thought leaders. And we think that we have the marketing skills to be able to get the broadcast out much, you know, really large with our existing audience and beyond. And that we hope to draw out those people that really want to talk to start the conversation. Then we create the kind of the broad model is then in these other publications. Then you start trying to get people to write to those crowds so that they can begin to do it. Because as this comes into their churches, they're not going to be able to just go, oh, that's not their problem. They're already losing members, you know? And so I think that this is something that we have to take on as the church and ask you just to participate. We'll take on the political problem of the church.
So you don't think resistance is futile?
No, I think we can defeat them.
We're at time. Let's thank our speaker again.